This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date. Terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris. Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Chris.
How are you?
Can I be honest?
Yes. I when I ask that, I actually want the answer.
And you
I'll sit down for hours. I got a lot of free time.
I had one of those kind of mornings where I thought I woke up, I thought I was in a good mood, and then the first phone call set me into like a little like, I don't, what's the word? I was like in a rut of like irritation.
Yeah.
And I think I drink too much coffee.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is, and I'm in total denial about it because I absolutely love coffee because I love white drugs, but I can't do them anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I found that coffee makes me angry. There's
yes.
no other way to, not anxious, not, I am quick to anger and rage.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it used to be, well, in my like TV, daily television days, it was required. Like you
yeah.
absolutely, I needed an entire pot of coffee before I left the house because of the kind of days that I would spend and the kind of fighting
yeah,
that I had to do
yeah,
on
gotta,
a daily basis.
You got to yell at people during meetings to get anything done on these TV
It was just
shows.
All yelling. It was constant,
yeah.
constant conflict.
Just
and so
hot.
Now I think it's like I get up and I have one cup and that's where I should put it down. But it, my natural personality is like 8 more cups and we'll see how I feel.
Yeah, because who makes a cup? It's people that get these pods and don't care about the environment. It's
yep.
because of my love of the earth, and you know I'm a total hippie. I make a whole pot.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you compost those grounds.
I
don't
do.
You?
I swear I do. I put them in the garden. Or I put them in my, I sprinkle them into my potted plants. I use
yep.
the grounds. It's good. It's
I've
good.
Actually
it's good.
Reused
yeah.
those grounds too. Did you realize that as of Jan 1, we're all supposed to be composting by law in California? We're supposed to be separating our garbage, and we're supposed to have a compost garbage.
I hope that they enforce that, and I hope they start with, you know, you got to put together all your cardboard, all the recycling. You got to get organized. We got to get organized.
We've got to get our garbage organized.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very important.
It is.
Well, I just went down to the optometrist to get glasses, and I realized the glasses that I like are from Michael Douglas in the movie Falling Down.
Yes.
Just the partial wire with the dark frame on top.
Yes.
So, and this person 50s. Was unfamiliar. So I kept one, looking for a scene that was a close-up of his face. This person had not seen the movie. I chose a scene where he has a bazooka and the little kid's like, no, you got to pull it apart. That's the trigger. And he's like raging out on some construction worker.
Yep.
The person's like, what movie is this? I'm like, no, I'm not going to be weird in the glasses. I just like the frames. I'm not. I think they felt like I was angry at society. Yeah. It was almost felt like all of a sudden I was buying a gun and they're questioning my motives.
You're holding up a thing where Michael Douglas is just shooting people randomly on the freeway. And you're like, these are the glasses.
Yeah, saying mildly racist things. Yeah, it's like, oh, this movie is from the 90s, but I'm very excited for the glasses.
Can I tell you, and it sounds exciting because did you end up realizing, did you guys come together and realize the phrase you were looking for is horn-rimmed glasses?
If it's a true horn rim, those come up to a point like a Far Side character.
Just for girls.
Yeah.
Only the girls' ones.
Okay. I guess that is what they're called, but this person didn't know that. They're like, oh, so like wiry but framey on top. And it's like, how long you been doing this?
They said wiry and framey.
Yeah. So like wiry down below and framey up top. And they didn't even wear glasses.
I mean, you know, the obvious joke here is, sir, this is a Wendy's. In the completely wrong building.
It's totally normal to buy glasses in an alley by a dumpster. There it is.
Box of glasses.
Wendy's.
Remember the, wasn't there like a box of free glasses? I just had a weird flash. Sorry, this is not going to be worth it. But there
it's
was
okay.
like a,
I'm ready.
There was free glasses that you could take and try on at my grammar school in the office.
Oh, wow.
Like, remember you got brought into a room for eye tests and hearing tests?
Yeah, I on a fancy day, it's very vague memory. It's more scoliosis and lice testing at my school. They didn't care if we could see. You had a curvy back, hit the bricks, you freak kid, they'd say. So it was like
scoliosis and lice tests.
Yeah, yeah. They'd always, for some reason, there's always an adult right behind me rooting through my hair or my back.
Get away.
It's time to suppress those. I'm very excited about our guest today. I believe she has a show within hours, which is creepy. I looked at her schedule.
You did some real research today.
I did. Oh, great. I always do. It's so weird that people think I don't do hours of painstaking research. I treat this like a college, like I'm a professor.
No, you do, and it absolutely shows
our
conversation. I think level.
Yeah, has said it shows, but I do it. This comic is so cool, like cool in a way where if I was like, Irene, can you help me get rid of this gun and we have to pick up a bag of money? I feel like she'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
We're the good guys, right? That would be the only question. I think I'm right about that. Anyway, she does clubs and also colleges all around the country.
All over this country.
Yeah. Everyone, Irene too.
Woo!
Yay!
I almost said put your hands together again. Hi, Irene.
Hi, Irene. Hi. How are you guys?
Am I right about that? Like in the green room, if at Helium, I was in a panic and I said, can you help me out? I'm in a bit of a spot. We have to go get rid of something. I wouldn't say it's a gun, but just...
You would show me the gun later.
I would. I feel like I just from... And we don't hang out all the damn time. But I feel like when I first met you that I feel like I know you well. For how little we've hung out.
This is true. If you were like, hey, I need to get rid of something, I'd be like, okay, let's make a plan. And then you show me the gun, and I'm like, oh, wow, interesting. Okay, didn't expect this.
Right.
From Chris Fairbanks, but let's do it. And also, can we get this done before the show starts? Because I'm still trying to do my spot.
Right, yeah. And you,
I need to figure out my set, so I can't. I can't just be driving to bridges and throwing guns off of them for you the whole time.
And this is, you do have a set tonight in Austin.
I do. I'm at Moon Tower.
Yep.
And I have a set right after.
It's at 7:30.
Oh.
7:30 Austin time.
Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm excited. I've never done comedy in Austin before. So first time.
And this is your first, obviously, then your first show of the fest.
Mm-hmm. Yep, just flew in.
What are you at?
So
the,
we'll see what happens.
Velveeta room? Where are you at?
It's not the Velveeta room, and I also didn't look up where it is yet. So,
well, I'll tell you.
I know it's not the Velveeta
room. I remember now. It's at the Cedar Street Courtyard.
Actually, I think
it is,
right.
Yeah. You're at the Cedar Street Courtyard at 7:30. Because I was trying to figure out where that is. It's where my friend Matt Sadler used to work. If he's there, you're going to love him. That's where I started comedy, Irene. I started.
Oh, yeah. I forgot until you just said that. I was like, that's right. You did start.
So I know all the venues, and I've never been invited to that festival, and it doesn't bother me.
What?
No, it's fine. Look, I have. They know I'm busy this weekend, or I assume they checked my schedule preemptively, and that's why they don't ask every year. But I'm kidding. You're going to have fun, though. It looks like a fun group of comics this year.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun.
Yeah.
But that is crazy that you're not doing it.
I never have, yeah. It's okay.
It sounds to me, if you started comedy in Austin and have never asked you to do it, somewhere in between there, you piss somebody off. Is
maybe.
This where the gun is coming from? Is this... have you asked other people to help you get rid of weapons?
I had a lot of side gigs in Austin. Money wasn't rolling in from comedy. And so, yes, I had a little crime ring.
Mm.
And I asked a lot of comics to help me. And I guess I rubbed some people the wrong way. Because now they're bookers. No, I don't know what it is. I don't think I've ever pissed anyone off in Austin. I think that they just... There's a thing about the city you start in. And I left there in 2003. I've developed away from... in my time away from there. And they still think of me maybe as the kind of skittish, nervous, stumbling, you know, I had no confidence. I think they still think I'm that guy. Maybe.
Yeah.
But I work their comedy club.
You know what? You know. We're going to get Irene to ask a bunch of people tonight, right after her first
set. Oh, that's all I'm going to do. I'm not even going to do my set anymore.
So, Chris Fairbanks, huh? And just
what's
see
the
what
problem?
They say.
I'm just going to ask each person that I think might run the festival or even be a part of it and be like, so, Chris Fairbanks, huh?
Here, there's a beef.
Yeah.
You want to talk about it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It is a good question and something I'll think about tonight.
Irene, let's focus back on Irene.
Yes, of course.
Irene, do you have a pre-show ritual? Because it is exciting to be at a festival. Like, I remember one time for somewhere... One of those festivals, I flew in and the plane was late. So I had to run from like the hotel. I had to rush to the first set and it was an awful feeling. And that's not what festivals are about. Is there anything that you do to like ground yourself knowing that festivals are a little extra? There's like lots of people hanging around. You might feel like it's make or break or whatever. Is there anything you do to kind of get yourself in the right headspace?
I think I don't like to be rushing. That always stresses me out. So I try to have plenty of time before my set, ironically doing this podcast.
Yes. That's why I was like, this is something that would make me nervous if I were you. Not that I want you to get nervous.
No, but also I think it's like a short set. So
this
is
a warm up. We're going to warm up.
It's like going to be like a 10-minute set. So it's like, that is easy.
And
it's not like if I was headlining, I may not. I might have been like, can we change the time of this podcast?
Yeah.
But no, it's perfect.
But it's like 10 minutes.
And you have time because you're number 6 in a lineup of 8.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I
looked at your schedule.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't do the Velveeta room for another
3 days. I literally
have no idea.
Chris is your manager now.
I was looking because there's a lot of shows at that you're on. Like this festival has you working. Like you have 2 tomorrow. you know, one's a daylight thing. I'd maybe skip that if I were you, but you're going to love the Velveeta room on Sunday night. All these gigs, by the way, are weeks ago because we record in advance, but
yes.
Irene was in Austin and you heard that she did great because she
killed
did.
It.
Yes.
See,
but please, please text me my schedule daily because I clearly have no idea when and where they are.
I downloaded the app and I will forward the prompts to your number.
But do you do anything like, say, do you do shadow boxing? Do you not talk to people? Do you drink two beers? Like, is there anything you do for the people that don't do stand up and go, how do you do that? How do you get up in front of people like that? Is there anything like that that you do that helps you?
I generally will write out a set list, even if it's like the same set list as like the night before or like literally every day that week. I just will rewrite the set list in my notebook.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stare at it in a panic that I'll forget all of my jokes on stage.
That's what I do.
And then I'll pace back and forth.
Yeah, gotta pace.
Backstage.
Mm-hmm.
I'll usually have a water, and then I'm just opening and closing it and drinking like one sip at a time, nervously.
Yeah. Recapping it after every
sip. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Click, click.
Yep. Never...
Click, 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 open.
There's fruit.
And it has to be like one of the twisty ones.
Yeah.
It can't be like a flip top. I don't like that.
Yeah. No. So you do have a writer where you specify the things that you require.
I mean, I feel like they always have the twisty ones because
flip tops, they don't work. They got the little safety thing. You're supposed to pull off a strip that's half the circumference of the brim and it just breaks. So then you got to use your teeth as a tool. And pop it.
And then you're like sucking it.
Yes. That,
like a baby.
Yeah. That I don't like that either. I don't like the suckling. We went through this as babies.
Same with this when they changed the Starbucks cups, when suddenly we had straw legislation that immediately outlawed straws.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was amazing. And then there was just suddenly we had sippy cups at Starbucks where I was like, yeah, I can't do this. This feels bad to me.
Yeah, for a while I just had to go, just give me the brim. Can you salt the rim and just give me a cup of salty coffee? Because I can't get used to the... But we have. Look how far we've come.
We really
adults
have.
With sippy cups.
God, that's so true of like a funny, nervous... I guess that's why I asked the question, because there is something about the green room energy that every time I would interpret it as like, these people are making me nervous or I can't be in here or whatever. But I didn't understand. That was kind of the magic alchemy of between you're on the sidewalk and you're on the stage.
Yeah.
You need to be in that room doing weird little things because that's part of getting ready, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Because otherwise, if I don't do that, I feel like I get on stage and I'm just like scattered.
Yes. Right.
And it's funny that you asked about it, Karen, because last time Irene and I worked together in Portland, the green room, it was one of those situations where it's very small.
Oh, my God.
And there was 7 comics in there.
Oh.
Every night there was guest sets. I had to go get my head straight in the showroom sitting with the audience where it was quiet. Like, and Irene and I both were like, well, oh, more people. There was just a lot of activity, and it was the opposite of what a green room is supposed to provide. Like,
yes.
I'm about to go up. And we both were like, we both equally get nervous and have to stare at our handwriting from 5 minutes ago. And new people are, hey, what's up? Like, you have to meet people.
Ugh.
The handshaking. And this was during, like, we're still paranoid we're going to die because of spit. Like it was, I remember that being one of the more stressful green room experiences that we shared.
I was surprised you just didn't kick people out.
I have to drink a bunch of coffee and get mad. And then I go overboard and I'm like, everyone get the hell out. I'm like, Jesus, I have to lose it. I wish I could more.
So wait, was it like local comics that were excited you guys were there?
Some of that, and then friends that were doing guest sets, and then there was confusion, and they thought they had a guest set every night, there was just a lot of people, in there. But yes, I'm nervous that they're all listening together, like having their feelings heard. It was also people that wanted to hang out, and I appreciate that, but I don't appreciate it right before I get on stage. That's all. You know,
100%. Yeah. Somebody recently, I was in San Francisco, like another comic, and I was trying to tape a set.
Yeah.
And then they like wanted to have like kind of a serious conversation, like right before or after my set. I was like, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. There's no way. I was like, we cannot talk right now. And I felt like bad. So I like texted them like yesterday, and I was like, hey, like, sorry about that thing the other week, but I just like, if I'm trying to tape a set for something right before or after, terrible time to try to talk to
people. Totally. Yes.
I one time almost started crying because, and it was right when I started stand up. So I would have like real, like full breakdowns every time because I didn't really have material. And I kind of was like, I've always wanted to do this and now I'm actually doing it. And I'm like, fine, I'm passing fine at it, but this isn't like changing lives in any way. So it's like every single time it was so hard. And no joke, it would be like three different people like, hey, where do I park? I don't know. How much is this going to cost? And it'd be like, I was the fucking concierge and I'd be like, stop talking to me. I would completely go insane on people. I'd just be yeah. like, don't fucking ask me for directions. Where I'm, and it was like, sorry, I could have been nice about this if it was if you asked me at 10 a.m. But you're yeah. literally asking me as I'm getting ready to go on stage, like, hey, tell me where to park here. Where it's like, no, sorry, I'm going hysterically blind. So I can't work through this with you.
Right. That those are situations where there isn't a green room. You're just like people that come in that assume you work there because you're standing yeah. there pacing around.
Yeah, yeah. Or your friends who are there to quote unquote support you.
Yeah,
who are truly oh my God, dragging you down.
I would prefer none of my friends and family yep. come to my shows if that's the case. I'm like, please leave me alone.
On the promo for anything, there's an asterisk at the bottom and it says strangers only. I've never understood when someone packs a room, this is her first time, and then everyone from their office is screaming, and I'm like, oh, and then usually you watch all these people with all this hope watch their friends struggle.
Yeah.
And it's the most dangerous situation to put yourself in. I just got to the point where I don't worry about it when I'm back home in Missoula and my dad and all my friends are going to be in the room listening. It took a decade and a half for that to stop bothering me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's fine if like friends and stuff will come to the show, but don't text or ask me anything day of the show that you can either Google or ask yeah. somebody else.
Yes.
Or don't text me like an hour before the show. Hey, I actually can't come. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
True.
I'm so sorry. They keep apologizing. It's like all you have to do is stop texting me.
Yeah.
Can I tell you guys, when I started, so I started stand-up in Sacramento and I truly did it, I think like three or four times and was then immediately in a contest. And at the same time that I started this, I was going to the JC because I flunked out of Sac State, which is not easy to do. And I was going to the JC and I was in a play at the JC. So in this contest, it was like, the night three of this contest, like I'd made it to the semifinals or something like that. And everyone from the theater department came to this show. It was so fucking humiliating. Like they were cheering. Now, it was out of love. I adored them for doing it.
Yeah.
It was very sweet. Like they were so proud and they were so excited and they were theater people. So it's like everything's times five. But literally it was like I packed the house filled with like, you know, 100 excited aunts instead of just like two. It was so embarrassing and so crazy. And it was just like, it was just one of those things too, where you can't, when I get nervous or anxious, it all becomes about control where it's like, nope, you stop doing that. You can't do that, whatever. And it was like the most out of control situation that I didn't ask. I did not invite them. Like they found out it was happening. It's making me nervous just thinking about
it. Yeah. I'm the same way. But then all of a sudden, like I already talked about this, but being thrust on stage during the daytime between bands and there's kids. And I had to do that recently. I'm like, oh, I have zero control here. This is complete chaos. And it made me default back to my defense mechanism ability to make people laugh to survive. Like it's how I used to get out of people punching me in the face when I was a kid. Like I'm like, oh, I have to make these people like me. And then afterwards I felt like I felt like going on a run. It was like an exhilarating feeling. So it's good to get out of that comfort zone, but I never will choose to ever. I want
so
much control. Yeah. So I hope, and at a festival, it's always, there's so much fun going on outside the shows. you probably don't have to worry about that. Irene.
Yeah, but I will say it's like, for me, I like a festival, but it also, I'm not an extrovert. Mm-hmm. So it can be way too much.
Yeah.
So I have to figure out when to leave the party.
Right.
You know, I have to like show up, show face long enough that people know that I was there and then quietly leave somehow before someone's like, hey, you're leaving. And I just have to like Irish goodbye. Everybody.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Always.
I think it's okay to do that.
I don't think there's anything wrong with Irish goodbying. I don't understand why people treat it like it's some thing where it's just like, oh, I'm sorry. Did you expect me to walk around and like kiss everyone goodbye? What do you want? Like, yeah. What are you talking about? I'll talk to you tomorrow. Or like, this isn't the end. We'll be fine.
Yeah, that is one of my biggest regret in my career is that I don't leave the party early. I am there, the last one there, and I'm back flipping into a dumpster, and I'm all of a sudden just hanging out with people that I don't even remember their names, and I'm like, let's keep going. I'd like, because we don't get to go to parties anymore. I mean,
yeah,
but there is a part of me that still wants to be in my 20s. That's what comedy festivals provide for comedians.
Yes,
like,
for sure.
Hey, you're all kids and there's no rules. Here's free drinks. And I'm like, okay, I'll be jumping in the dumpster.
Yeah, exactly. We're sponsored by a pot company. Hey, everybody, come collect your joints. Or whatever. Yeah. We're just like, okay.
I mean, usually smoke these. Should I have three? Yeah.
I'm fighting a security guard now. What's happening?
I just recently... Like a tiny pack of cigarettes I was given at a comedy show, a dozen joints, pre-rolled joints. And I'm like, well, they're so little and it's so well packaged. And
no.
I had one before golfing and I'm like, I'm a danger. I don't know what I'm doing right now. I'm like, I still get in my head too much. I can't. No.
No.
Yeah. I don't want to get used to it. Don't make me do weed.
We won't, Chris. Irene, you started stand-up in Chicago?
Technically, yes. I started in Chicago, but I consider San Francisco like my home.
Me too. Well, that's,
comedy scene.
That's what I did. Because I only did it in Sacramento for a handful of times and then moved to the city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically what happened. Yeah.
Was the Punchline your home club?
Yes, that's my home club.
Nice.
Is that where you did your last album?
My first and last album.
Yeah. Well, oh, it's sure your day bud album?
It's my day bud album.
Wow. That is, yeah, I recorded my album there 2 years ago, my day bud.
Your day bud?
Yeah, I had a day
bud. I feel like a lot of people have recorded their day bud albums.
It's such a good room. They set it up perfectly.
Yeah.
It's, did you guys both make jokes about the skyline picture behind you?
Of course I did.
Have to.
I did not.
I always.
I never have.
Will you not? Are you against it?
I just feel like people have done it. So I'm like,
not,
who cares?
Not Ouch. My Lombard Street. That it's not that curvy, I always say. And then I Coit Tower. Yeah, I thought it was, that's more like the Tower of Pisa because it's kind of crooked. I have a bunch of.
Chris, you're making this up.
I am. I know I am. I know. But I can't not, especially at all the heliums have that too, like a caricature painting of the city. And I have to say, that's not what the thing looks like. Because the crowd will go, oh, they made a joke about our city.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's all you're going to get because of the mural. I didn't crack a newspaper before I got here. Oh, God. That's so funny.
So how long were you in the city before you came to... Did you then move to Los Angeles? Do the old...
Yeah, so I moved to San Francisco, technically Berkeley, in 2012. And then I think I left end of like 2018.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Nice. That's a good, solid amount of time to be doing sets there.
6 years.
Yeah, that's great.
What schools in Berkeley? I'm going to reveal. I don't know a lot of things.
Well, there's Berkeley.
Berkeley
Well, that's the one I went to is Berkeley.
Right, right.
Oh, you went there.
Yeah.
My dad would be very proud of you.
Because that's a good school, right?
He really loves it.
What did you study?
I mean, it is a good school. I wanted to go to Stanford, and I will say this every time, still bitter they didn't take me.
Stanford's tough, though. Don't you have to have like a 5.7 GPA and like your parents have to both be the governor of California and stuff?
I know.
It's so intense. I got a Stanford, I'm a lot older than you, but I got a Stanford sweatshirt in high school. And I remember wearing it around. My mom goes, that's as close as you're going to get. Because it's like the most expensive, you know, one of the most expensive schools. And also you really do, it's like you have to be related to people or something.
Yeah. Or just like the smartest person ever.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was bummed.
I think my parents wanted to lower my expectations for, but they were getting me University of Montana sweatshirts and everything when I was a young boy. I knew that's where I was going to go. Yeah. Right down the street.
Otherwise,
Berkeley's... I totally could have gone to Berkeley or Stanford.
You could have. You just focused on a different thing. But Berkeley's an amazing school. I mean, it's no slouch, Irene.
I mean, I kind of checked out by senior year. I was like, I'm going to do comedy. I don't care anymore.
Oh, did you decide during college? Yeah. I started doing improv and stuff at the end of college. And I'm like, wait a minute. I think I like this. I'm not going to be an art history professor. Mm. That's like what what were you studying?
Yeah.
So I majored in Asian American and Asian diaspora studies. And most people like become academics, like professors or whatever, and I didn't want to do that.
Did you say diaspora?
The diaspora?
I don't know what that is.
It's like when you move from like one place to another place.
Oh.
It's like the diaspora. So there's like Asian people that are like not in Asia, you know?
Oh, okay. Isn't that funny that I've lived my whole life, and I swear, if that word has been used around me, I was looking down at my shoes or something.
I feel like it's a very college word, and I don't even know if I described it well enough. I'm sure I'll get a lot of angry emails that's like, that's not what it is.
God.
I'm like, again, I checked out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I must repeat, I was doing sets at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was doing comedy. All right.
There are words that are just for college and they never happen again. Words like algebra or syllabus. Like, I remember when someone first used the phrase syllabus, I had never heard that word and I laughed at it because it sounded like an STD. And then you never hear the word syllabus again once you graduate. It's like, that's just a college word. I hate college words. Dormitory.
I feel like the quintessential college word is like heteronormative.
That's
such a college word.
Yeah, yeah. That's a newbie, but a goodie.
So what was the thing, or was there one thing at that time that made you realize stand-up was a thing you wanted to try? Like, did you see somebody do it, or like, had you always secretly wanted to? And
No, I didn't know what comedy was. Like, when I was a kid, I loved cartoons. But I always thought like I was going to be a doctor or a scientist, or like all of my family like went to med school or did stuff that was like in that realm. Long story short, I was number one, a huge fan of Ellen. So she, you know, started by doing stand-up. So that's kind of how I started doing stand-up. And also a girl told me I was funny. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll be a comedian.
Here we go.
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah, it's funny. I think it is other kids telling, that's what it was for me. Other kids saying, you should be a comedian. And I'm like, oh, that's not a job or whatever. But if you keep hearing it from kids, hey, I just want to say thank you to everyone I went to grammar school with.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks to that one girl that I had a crush on that said I was funny. otherwise, I wouldn't be here right now.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, wait a second. She's got a point.
Yeah.
I do.
And you're kind of doing it for her, even though it's years later.
Yeah. I know. It's like, we don't even talk anymore. But it was like, I was like trying to impress that one girl.
Yeah. I don't. There are a handful of people that are, I rotate between them all as the reason that I started doing stand-up or someone inspiring me. And I don't think any of them know that they are that person to me. Maybe I should write some thank you letters.
You should. You know, that made me think, because actually I wanted to be a stand-up because like right when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 is when they started airing Evening at the Improv, on, you know, on Sundays where it would just be like, you know, 12 different people doing sets or whatever. And I was like, oh, I wanted that. So I want to do that. And I would just watch it. I was kind of obsessed with it. But then one year when I went to camp, Steve McDonald, who was like this, the older boy that everybody loved, who was really funny himself, one of his favorite things to do, because he lived near the city, was go in and go to comedy shows. And he's the one that told me I should be a comic. And to me, at the time, I was 14 or something. And it was like, he was kind of a stand-up expert. And he was like, you have to do this. And it was, first of all, I loved him. So it was like thrilling. But then at the same time, it was almost like someone who had gone out and done the research in real life and was like, yeah, you should do that too. And so it became a thing of like, it went from the dream of, oh, that's on TV, I wish I could do that, to a person in reality going, no, you can and you should. So my thank you note is to Steve McDonald, which I think he knows this, but if he doesn't, yeah, he was the reason I believed that it was possible.
Yeah. I just realizing there was a camp counselor or a volunteer at some religious camp I went to in Estes Park, Colorado, and he had a Letterman jacket with Comic Relief logo on the back. And I remember, like, how'd you get that jacket? He's like, oh, I'm a comedian. I have no idea who he was, but he had whatever.
Robin Williams.
Yeah, he got some free swag. But that is one of the people. I'm like, oh my God, I just have to get out of Montana. That's the first thing. But I have no idea who that was. It could have been Steve Middleman. I don't know. It may have been, actually.
It could have been Gary Muledeer. Irene, when you first decided you were going to do it and you went in, did you do open mics in the city? Did you start in Berkeley?
No. So I started in Chicago. When I first started, yeah, I was in high school and I took a stand-up class at the Second City.
Oh, wow.
And it was literally me and two other people. And we would just tell jokes to each other in, like, the classroom. It was really weird.
And it cost $800.
I mean, at least three. You know, it was a little.
Do you remember what your first joke was, or the assignment? I remember mine.
I do not remember any of the first jokes I told or the assignments. But I do remember it didn't really click with me in that class. Like, I think we had, like, little writing exercises or whatever. But just the way it was taught, like, didn't work for me. So then I kind of was like, I don't really get stand-up. So then I kind of started doing improv for a while.
Yep.
And then I went back to do stand-up, and then I kind of got it more.
Yeah.
It's hard.
I had that same trajectory.
Yeah.
That's so... Yeah.
That makes sense, actually, because improv, like, it's almost like everything is accepted, right? If you're within the rules and the realm of that scene and that reality. So you have that chance to just kind of throw stuff out and build the trust in yourself to think of the funny thing in the moment. That's actually the more logical trajectory than just being like, well, I'm here and I'm going to try to mimic what I think other people are doing on stage, because I remember the first year sitting there and trying to write jokes, I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea how to even like mimic other people. It was just kind of bad talking.
Oh, totally.
Right? Like, just my thoughts, and you're going to think this is interesting.
And you're like, oh God, this is very bad.
Mine was a similar, that guy Matt Sadler that I said worked at your venue where you have a show in about an hour. Just a reminder.
Let's keep an eye on the clock.
This podcast is going to be riddled with the schedule updates for you, Irene. It was an improv festival in Austin, and I went with my Montana group, and one of the clinics there was, here's a stand-up clinic. It was like a one-hour thing, like, for fun, and I decided in that class of three people, I'm like, maybe I'll move here. I've never had even been to a city with a stand-up scene. That's what made it real. And so when I moved... That's why I know exactly where your venue is. When I moved to Austin, because he said, if you move here, just look me up, this guy, Matt. And again, he's one of these people that inspired me, and I don't know that he knows that. But I just, you're the only guy I knew. I had his phone number on a piece of paper, and I went to his work. And I'm like, hi, I moved here. What do I do? And I remember he just said, well, try and write some jokes. And once you get on stage, do your second favorite joke and then talk in between and end with your favorite joke. That was his, which is kind of good advice.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of true. And so yeah, in a way.
I went to the Velveeta room right down the street. You're going to want to take a left. It's where your show is Sunday. It's kind of the main drag. Bring a friend. That area's gotten kind of sketchy. That's just a side thing. But yeah, you're performing where I first did stand up, and I love that room. I think you'll really have fun there. It's a great.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, you're gonna love it.
I hope I meet this man that you keep bringing up.
Oh my God, could you imagine?
I'm going to be like, Chris Fairbanks. And he's going to be like, who is that?
No,
he's
no.
He's going to like, don't mention that name around here. We can't. Yeah. Not during Moon Tower. During Moon Tower.
Yeah. It's a weird way to realize I've been blacklisted.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, no, he might be around. I think Matt still does stand up. Yeah. You might see him. I can't wait.
Keep my eyes peeled.
Yeah, just keep your eyelids, cut your eyelids off your face.
That's really funny, though, that advice, because the first contest, I was in two contests, and one was a smaller one before the bigger one that I was talking about earlier. And the first one I was in was just like at it was basically an open mic that I went to, but then they were like, okay, well, now we're going to pick the best one or whatever. And so there was Andy Kindler, and then Andy Kindler was the middler that week at the club downtown, and the headliner, whose name I cannot remember, I apologize, the headliner was there, and he told me, take 10 jokes, number 1 to 10, best to worst, 1 to 10. Take number 10, you put it at number 4. You take number 9, you put it at number... And he literally told me the mathematics.
What?
Wow.
Take number 1, you put it at number 10. So
I need that. Like, I need that. Actual.
Nobody ever told me this.
I need that now.
But it's kind of what that guy. It's basically. It's essentially. I think it's arguable the numbers in between. But it's basically he's saying take your best joke and put it at the end.
Right.
Take your second best joke, put it at the beginning.
Right.
And then basically within there, order so that you have weak stuff
and recovery.
So that you don't
moments.
Go into weak stuff early. Like yeah, now, yeah. I understand it. At the time, I was like. What a hack. Like, I wanted to judge him for it, where I was he's helping you so much. But he basically was, like, saying, like, start strong and then get, like, if you have to get weak in the middle so that you've already built up a little goodwill and then end strong again, essentially.
Yeah.
So they don't remember you as having been pretty good.
Yeah.
As opposed to just kind of, like, start strong, peter out, leave crying.
No, that is still what I do. But I cry in the middle and recover at the end.
I will say I absolutely did not do that for my album recording.
What'd you do?
I started fine, and then I think the best stuff is at the end of the album.
I think that's okay, like, to ramp up like that.
Sure.
Yeah. It's like a roller coaster. You know, I think actually I do think it peaks like halfway through the album is my favorite joke. And then like at the end, there's like a bunch of jokes that I like. But the first like maybe 4 or 5 tracks, they're fine in my opinion. Like,
where on that album?
Not my favorite.
Do you have your If I Were a Cannibal, Newborn Babies Would Be the Most Delicious Meat? I'm butchering the joke.
Yes,
you have the best baby eating joke that I know in the business.
Thank you.
Is that on the album?
I appreciate that. It is on the album, and it's right before the very last track.
Nice. I loved watching you because we did a few shows together in Portland. It was fun to watch because maybe at the time that was a newer joke for you, and it was like,
yeah, it's, I mean, compared to like the rest of my album, it is quite a new joke.
But I watched it progress, and the audience, like, because if you talk about eating human babies, some people, they're just trained to not listen to the joke part. They're like, oh, I don't like those words together. But then by the last night, you were killing those babies.
Thank you.
Do you have cannibalizing babies on your set list for tonight?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Nice. That's my favorite joke. And I do feel like it's the joke that if I tell it, audience members remember the most.
Yeah.
I would imagine. And I could tell that you were enjoying telling that joke, because that's a joke where for a minute you kind of lose the audience, and you know that that's happening, and you know that you're looking forward to a minute later when you those lines bring you recovery, and then they like it. It's kind of fun to play with that moment and even milk that moment. Like, let's see how long I can let them not like me so I can recover after this. I kind of like that.
Yeah, I think that's like kind of my like style of comedy, or what I prefer is kind of losing the audience for a bit to see if I can get them back.
Yeah.
And that's fun. I'm like, I don't need you to laugh the entire time. I want you to be uncomfortable for a bit.
Yeah, you do have a few of those moments.
But I also think when you do stuff like that, it's because, I think that this attitude is incorrect for overall success in stand-up comedy. So don't listen to me. But I do like that. And maybe it's being a female comic. I always had that thing of like, I have to prove early on I am fine and I'm in charge, or they'll fucking like show no weakness, right? They don't trust you automatically. They're worried for you, which means then they're kind of mad at you. And this is like, in the 90s. So it could be a little different now where it evened out maybe a little. But I always felt that thing of having to like say dangerous, quote unquote, things to show them like I'll do what those dudes do plus some. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't give a fuck. And that idea of then almost like a show of strength just so they'll fucking relax and let me get some laughs. That was always kind of my fucked up thinking about it, where just like that idea of like, I'm not uncomfortable in this silence, but I know you are. And I'm like, I'm the one in control. I think that's a great move on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to say, my reaction was going to be like, well, that's just how it was in the 90s. But you can go to many different parts of the country and it's still the 90s as far as that audience is like, they're still like, think that they're going to heckle you or get attacked, or that it's, or the contest that we were talking about, competitions. I'm so glad that's kind of over. There's no more stand-up competitions anymore. It's not like a vibrato, a confidence contest. I like where stand-up has gone and is right now. It's pretty great.
I agree. Also, I feel like with contests, it's like a certain style of comedy will always tend to do better for contests.
Yeah. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like, I'm never going to win a contest because I like to like kind of fuck with the audience and they don't like that to vote for.
Right.
You know? Yeah. They're like, no, I want the guy who was like, you know, funny and likable the whole time or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the guy, that one contest I was talking about, the guy that won was chalking. It was 1989, I think, or 1990. So he was talking about the war and how great it was, and let's hear for our troops and this. He had a whole bit at the end that absolutely was like jingoistic and just playing on those heartstrings and like support our troops. So then he won and everybody else, it was like, you know who was in that contest? Brian Posehn, Vernon Chapman, some of the fucking best stand-ups there were. And this person won who, look, he was, you know, he was an accomplished comedian.
Was it John Morgan, the Raging Cajun?
No. All I remember is he had a very fancy silk suit on. And he just kind of, it was just kind of like he was talking to the people. It was Citrus Heights, California. He knew that audience.
Yeah.
And he knew what was kind of like going to get the applause going and stuff. Whereas I was literally up there like singing like Annie and like, how come I didn't win? We're just like, no one needs your bullshit, lady. So yeah.
Oh God, I don't miss there. Yeah. And I'll talk about him because he was mean. There was a guy that used to come to Cap City every year and he had just won a lottery. So he had a lot of money because he had somehow won the lottery.
Wow.
And
do you know how much money?
I think it was millions, and I think maybe his wife even won it. And And Martha...
Oh, my God.
Martha Kelly was featuring, and she had... And this was, you know, early 2000s. She had an act and a demeanor that was easy for a Texas audience to, like, she's not confident. She's not in control.
Yeah.
And they kind of turned on her. And then he went up, and he's like, let's everyone just take our hands and wipe our brow and know that that is over. It made me so mad. And then he closed by singing the national anthem. That's why. And he was saying racist, incredible things about the war, one of whichever war. I think it was terror that we were fighting at that point.
Yeah.
And I was mad, and I went up to him. I'm like, that you have to go apologize to Martha. That really hurt her feelings. And I think he did. But that guy, he's no good. And if you're listening right now, I stand by.
Well, also, it's like.
It was so mean.
He kind of showed his colors, because it's like, if you're a good comic, you would just start your act. And that would make people, you know what I mean? It's just like, if somebody has a bad set before you for whatever reason, it's your job as the comic to just kind of like be the next thing. You don't have to like directly shit on people.
Oh, he did for a while.
I'll
never forgive him. I'm still mad. That wasn't a contest, but I think, those, you don't see those guys much anymore. Those angry old national anthem singers.
I've never seen that at a show. And you guys are both like, yeah, they sang the national anthem after. I'm like, this is insane. I've never heard of this.
It's like pre-internet, you know, it was rough. It was tough out there. those kinds of like, well, because also like now I feel like people have all seen great comedy for a sustained amount of time. So the people who rose up were like the people who didn't win those contests, but they made it to LA and then started like actually getting jobs.
Yeah.
And were innovators and stuff. You know, that's the whole thing of like road comics versus like comics that went on to actually make it or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it their divide was much greater back then in that way, I think. But now also there's just so much more comedy. Like back then the choices were so limited, and now it's just like so many people have tried it and can do it. And I love it now because as opposed to contests, you know, the internet basically made things a communal and community, and like it's, you network and you make friends. That's how you get somewhere, not putting other people down or whatever, like that kind of like, I will best you and then I will rise to success. It just does not work like that anymore.
Yeah.
Which is great.
That's why I think, Irene, do you like this whole roast thing? I like that kind of, I don't ever want to roast anyone.
I don't want to participate in a roast, really, because first of all, it's a lot of homework for jokes that I'm never going to use again.
It's all burnt. Yeah, the second you say the joke, it's over.
It's like, okay, I'm making fun of one person who I'm never going to make fun of again.
Yeah.
And I'm spending time. I'm not getting paid. What is the point? Like, that's dumb.
Yeah.
It's mostly, honestly, for me, it's that. I can like watch a roast and I'm like, okay, like I get it, but it's definitely not my like favorite type of comedy.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Maybe I'm on the fence about it, 'cause I do like writing mean jokes, but.
Well, the thing is, to be in a roast, or for most of them, like roast battle-y type stuff, then you have to get roasted. And that's my thing where I'm like, oh no, I've lived my whole life to not have to hear what people actually think of me. And then have that made into like extrapolated out into jokes that an entire audience could enjoy. Like that, it would haunt me for the rest of my life if I was ever in a roast battle. It would be horrible.
Yeah. I think that I just don't like that there's a winner and it might not be me. I went my whole life doing solo things, skateboarding and all that. And I didn't realize that I am very competitive. But I just didn't like team sports. But I get really. I would get really emotional during those contests and think terrible things. And I just got to stay away from them. Yeah.
Irene, is there anyone you're excited to see yourself at Moon Tower this year?
Yeah. Who's there?
Didn't look at the schedule.
It's okay. I'm forwarding it to you. I got the whole lineup here.
I mean, it's incredible. I even made it on the correct flight. Do you know what I'm saying? No, I didn't check the schedule yet because I was like, oh, I'm going to fly in. I'm going to do my one show. I'm not really going to do that much today.
Yeah.
So I was going to kind of check out more shows like tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday.
Got it.
So I haven't checked yet.
Yeah. You know? Just enjoy the city. You're in a fun part of the city and I would just walk around. I love Austin. I miss it. But
you'll have to tell me if there's any good thrift stores.
Oh, I can help you with that.
Yeah. Text it to me after you send me my schedule.
Okay, I will. I have a whole packet of things. Also, I have your lanyard here.
Yeah.
And you're going
to
walk.
Oh, I do have to go get that.
Yeah, drink tickets.
Drink tickets and wristband. You do. Oh, I can't believe I have to ship this overnight.
Wait, I just had the best idea, but I think it's for a very specific group of people. But what if we invented a clickable top water bottle that you use all the time, that always works, that always clicks, that like it's not really, doesn't have water in it. You can just take it almost like a fidget spinner and that's your clicker.
But it's a water bottle. Yeah.
It's your clicker that you just bring everywhere all the time. It's like, oh, that'd be really comforting. You can have it.
Can't even put water in it. It's just disguised like a Barbasol safe.
Yes, exactly.
A shaving cream safe.
You can put your schedule inside. The top is just a clicker.
The festival in Boise that they had no, you had to buy a stainless steel cup. And I noticed everyone had it on a holster on their hip. And so at the end of the day, there was no garbage on the ground. There was no cups being dispersed. You had to buy a cup and then people would get their drinks in. You didn't want to lose your cup. Otherwise, you had to buy a new one. And so there was no trash. It was actually a pretty progressive.
That's smart.
Yeah.
That's kind of
way
cool.
Way to go, Idaho. I don't say that much. I just want
that
to say
that makes me think of it, Bridgetown. I mean, did you ever do Bridgetown back when it existed?
Yeah, I did it the very last year.
Oh, cool.
That it existed.
Mm-hmm. Wait a second. Maybe that was the first time I met you in passing one time, like on a sidewalk, very briefly.
I wasn't sure if we had met actually, so I couldn't remember.
I just remember being introduced to you and you were very, it was just, you were just almost like, kind of like, hey. I was like, okay, Mrs. Cool.
Which also that's why it's also that side of Irene where I'm like, she'll be cool if we have to go hide this duffel bag.
Yes, and she
gun.
Won't. She
or
won't
sorry,
tell
we have to
anything.
Pick up a duffel bag and hide a gun. I keep forgetting which job I'm doing tonight.
Please keep track.
It's called being cool.
That's right.
Irene is cool in a classic way.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't remember if we had met, because if we had, I was like, oh, it was probably really brief, because I know we hadn't had like a full conversation.
No, we've never even said like, hi, how are you? Or like the idea that you actually started somewhere, but then really your home place is San Francisco. It's like, me too.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it just made me think, so it could have been that last year of Bridgetown, which was such a fun year too. Chris, I think you
so
were there.
Fun.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, I think we that's the year I met Irene. Yeah. I
don't, oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I didn't
yeah, yeah.
You at
that
the
could have been
line.
It. But it made me think of that one theater that everything kind of was centered in, and there, the upstairs where there was a pool table, they kept putting pizzas out on, pizzas and donuts.
Yeah.
And every time I would put, there was water, obviously, everywhere. And every time I would put my water bottle down, I would turn around, and then there would be like 52 water bottles.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh shit, which one's mine? And I would just go start a new one.
Yeah.
And like the waste that year alone.
Because
everyone would do it where you just like take three sips and then you'd be like, hey, I have no idea which one is mine.
Well, they should have had like markers to label them.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone has a little marker in a holster. I just want everyone to have a utility belt.
Too hippie for me. I don't want to just be stuff down there.
It doesn't, it's not good for the silhouette.
Right.
I will say at Bridgetown, that was one of the worst bombs I've ever had. For me and multiple comics, there was a Bay Area showcase where it was like comics that used to live in the Bay or lived in the Bay, whatever, at one of the Bridgetown shows. And literally, we all bombed so hard. Like, not a single laugh. I'll bring it up to, like, like, I'll be like, hey, remember that time we bombed at Bridgetown? And like, they'll be like, oh my God, like, where, how could I forget?
Where was it? That bad. Was it at that VFW? Was it
was not a VFW. I think it was like a bar show.
Okay.
But everyone bombed except Brent Weinbach murdered.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Wait, that's, do you feel comfortable naming the other people who bombed?
Yeah, who bombed? Who bombed?
I mean, that's the fun part, right?
Who bombed the hardest? Names.
Yeah,
I want names.
We all, well, I think we all just bombed. Yeah. Yeah. It was me, Andrew Arolfo, J.R. DeGuzman, and maybe, I think there was one other comic, and I can't remember who it was, yeah. But I just remember I'd like talked to J.R. and Andrew about it, and just ate it so hard. Like, anytime we'll be like, hey, that one time, they're like, oh God, you know, it's just like PTSD.
Wait a second. Was it in that bar that had neon, like black light paint on the walls?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
That, I remember there was a show where people, it was kind of during the day, and people came out and they were just like, oh my God, what just happened? And it,
yeah.
I don't think it was yours. I think it was another one.
I don't
one.
Think.
You know what's wrong?
I think ours was in the evening, but I don't remember.
Well, the room you're talking about, it we all have our desired setup, a short, normal stage, low ceiling, ideally to be in a corner, and then the room fans out to the audience who's in an elevated theater setting. But that room was just a pit, like a sunken bedroom, like a pit. So you're down lower than everyone. Everyone was just looking down at you on the ground floor. And there's like a catwalk around. It was more like a dogfight situation, like where you would hold or chicken, whatever you, kind of fights you go to. Chickens or dogs usually is what I end up at. But that's, it's not good for comedy.
Not good for comedy.
Yeah, that was, it was net part of the theater. Like there was a big room and then the side room was the neon room and it was just, everyone came out, white as a ghost.
People suffered. People suffered in that room. Also, that I feel like that year, I think that was the year that Gallagher showed up.
Yeah.
And he was on Andy and Matt's Probably Science podcast. And he immediately started saying offensive things on purpose. And the audience was like, oh. And then it just kind of kept going. And then we were like, oh, this is just a crazy old guy now.
He's an angry guy that has 17 HBO specials where he used to joyfully jump on a trampoline couch.
Yeah.
And now he will just list all the different races that are a problem. Or what, you know, like he's really an un. It's sad
it was sad, and also that it almost was like kind of a early warning of that thing. What was happening to people, where it's just like, oh, you've been left alone with your the bad in websites too long. That kind of like, oh, you know how it is with these fill in the blank of pretty much anybody besides a white man. Like that crazy thing where, and he's at a comedy festival where the average age is 35, where it's like, dude, who are you talking to right now? Like, it was rough.
I think he felt, because I did try to calmly talk to him and acknowledge that I remember who he was and that I watched all his specials.
Oh,
and then he was like,
who he was.
Right.
That was the problem.
I think he thought he was there as a joke and everyone was there to shit on him and turn on. Like, he thought that he was a punchline because he kind of became one because he was being a dick to everyone.
Yeah.
But the most symbolic thing about him being there is he had a hat that had what his hair used to look like attached to the brim of it. And they put it over his patchy existing golem-like hair.
And wait, was it for a joke?
No. He had
like a toupee hat?
Yeah, a toupee hat. Yeah. It was just to have for the old looks. And
I remember that thing happened in that neon room also. So it was, I hope I never have a set in
there. That room. You're scarred by just velvet paintings for life now. And any kind of black light.
Yeah.
I don't think I went to the neon room.
It was
at all.
Yeah, it had one of those rooms where you're like, oh, I didn't know my clothing was riddled with, I hope, toothpaste.
Yes. Could this be lint?
Oh, God. Why is it right up front? Yeah, I think that also that year, people saw Andy Dick running from the cops. There was a lot of like famous people. Everyone was acting famous crazy. I think maybe it was a full moon. I was jumping into dumpsters. It was
was a dramatic year that year.
We're just describing fun.
True.
Yeah.
Irene, I really wish that you had already done like 3 days of this festival so you could be telling us festival gossip right now or something. Like somebody did a thing. Would you mind like writing stuff down and
fabricating
maybe
some memories?
Emailing us after?
I mean, I am usually the last to know any festival gossip because I'm so boring and like a square. And I don't drink, so it's like, oh, I don't get the fun, like, drunk stuff. Mm. But if I hear any festival gossip, oh, I will be writing it down and sending it to
okay,
you.
Please.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, since quarantine, it's just been so dry with truly, it's like anything at all.
Yeah.
It's just like, does anything happen anymore?
Just give us something. Make something up. Also, you're not boring. Remember, I said you're cool.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to make boring cool.
Yeah, okay. I got
okay. You
try and merge those words.
Yeah. I mean, so when I describe myself as boring, I'm not saying it is a bad thing.
Right.
I think it's cool.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I'm trying to turn it around. I'm turning it around.
The person that leaves first and is kind of like, well, have fun, you guys. That really is the coolest move.
Yeah.
That you can make where it's just like, yeah, I don't need any of this.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
It brings me so much joy. I'm like, I don't need any of this validation that people are seeking. I'm going to go back to my room and do what I want to do.
It's like later nerds, and then you take off and go into the bathroom like Fonzie and wait it out alone.
Just comb your hair.
Comb your hair.
Just moisturize, you know, do my whole bedtime routine. I'm trying to look young.
Lotions,
okay? I'm trying
the
to
gloves,
stay young.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, not to drastically change the subject as we near the end.
But what moisturizer do you use?
Let's just everyone...
Oh, whatever.
What?
I just use hotel lotion.
Why was Fonzie always... why was he always in the bathroom? Why was Fonzie... Why was that his office? Was
it
that
was
a cocaine
office.
Joke?
No, not just where he... The mirror where he'd comb his hair and he'd have meetings, you know.
Oh, yeah. He'd bring people in there and they'd chat shit out by the toilet.
Yeah, because you couldn't do it in a booth. There's no
right.
walls, you know.
Private. It's private time. That's why.
That's right.
I don't know. He made the toilet cool, though. And that's what Irene's doing with being boring.
That's what Irene's doing with the lotion that you get from the hotel.
Yeah.
Which is so hilarious. Like, I'm going to do my routine. And then it's like, what moisturizer do you use? Yeah, whatever's there. Just like that fucking weird little thing of like the moisturizer that somehow is dry as you're putting it on. Like,
oh, yeah. You got to watch where you put
it. She got it.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, that'll leave. See. Oh, no.
I'm holding it up to the camera.
Oh, no, that's good.
This is the lotion that came with the room.
Is it pretty good? That seems like a good brand.
Yeah, that seems there.
I've never heard of it.
I don't know.
The ingredients are on it.
You'll know tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As you watch.
I feel like in most nice hotels have pretty good lotion. Or decent enough.
A lot of them don't anymore. And I think that's because filthy men use it to masturbate. Not to bring the... This isn't a dirty podcast and it's not usually something Karen and I talk about. But I suspect that is why. Because sometimes I need lotion. And it's not in the room to masturbate with.
No.
And it's not in the room anymore. They've quit giving it. They're like, oh, there's two shampoos. There's a place to put the lotion, but they just add extra shampoo. And I'm not going to make that mistake twice.
Sir, that's on you. If that's what you're going to be abusing this lotion with, then we will not.
Then use shampoo. Use shampoo.
Use that moisturizing shampoo. That'll work.
Yeah,
That'll be fine. I just remember there's been times where going on the road and being like, I want to make this bag, I want to make as much room as possible in this bag. And so I'll go, oh, the hotel will provide. And then, so I will always let the hotel provide my shampoo because that's just like zhit and it's gone. But I will not, I can't rely on their conditioner because I have such dry hair.
Conditioner's important.
And I can't rely on their moisturizer if I'm going to, because I have an old face.
No, you're right. the soap's fine, but from there, the softening of your tissues, that's on you. We're grownups. We got to take that shit seriously.
We really do.
I mean, you're correct. I should be using pricier lotion and stuff, but I'm Asian, so I'm riding this out.
You simply don't have to.
Yeah,
I mean, Asian don't raisin or whatever it is.
Wait, did you just make that up?
No, that's a thing. Oh, okay. Somebody said that before.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying I like it, but if you just came up with it right in that moment. Oh.
No, that's definitely somebody's joke. Mm.
Well, you have to go. You have a concert in about an hour.
I love that we put all of our festival wishes and wants on Irene. Just like, I remember a time where thanks for being a guest on our podcast today. I hope you have a great time at Moon Tower.
Thank you.
I
hope I don't bomb again like that one time.
No, you're going to be it's going to be so fun because it's been years since anyone's truly been to a festival like that one. That's a big one and you're going to have so much fun. I don't even need to tell you. Even if you want to go home early, you're still going to have fun.
Which I will.
Yeah.
But not super early, hang out for 7 minutes so you can take a couple notes for us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. No, I'm going to hang out for 30 minutes to an hour and then dip.
I like
it. Perfect. That's it. That's the way to do it.
Yep.
Well, have fun on my behalf. Say hi to Austin. And if you run into Matt Sadler, tell him thanks for making me start.
Your whole career.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like.
Thank him for everything.
Chris Fairbanks says, wow, thanks for everything.
Thank him for 99 to 03. Just thank him for that.
99 to 03.
I got it from here. I remember telling him.
Yeah.
And then I left. Skip town. But yeah, have fun. And thanks for being on our show.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I love talking with you guys.
It was great. Great to actually get to talk to you.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
We'll have to do it again.
Yes, for sure.
You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN.
AR.
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Casey O'Brien.
Mixed by John Bradley.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Listen, follow, and leave us a review on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And don't forget, you can listen to new episodes 1 week early on Amazon Music or early and ad-free by subscribing to Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. That's what we do. I do that every time, Irene, and I'm a grown-up and I make that sound.
Follow Do You Need a Ride on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you never miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
And visit the ExactlyRightStore.com to purchase Do You Need a Ride merch.